Welcome to today's study, little children. It's February 7th, 2024 of the Common Era. I hope everything is set up correctly here. Once again, I had a very late night getting to bed about 9 o'clock in the morning. Morning, that's okay, but that was instead of nighttime. In other words, I'm 12 hours late in getting to bed. So it is the year 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 2014 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today, this February 27th. I mean 7th, sorry, what did I think? Oh yeah, it's 2014 hours, but February 7th is the date. Now Pharaoh had 7 daughters. This is paragraph 6 of the Arabian tradition in the Crucible, or C cubed article. In this tale, all afflicted by various... Oh, I spelled diseases wrong. Look at that. There's a typo. I'll make note of that. I just noticed that for the first time. But the eldest daughter, and this was written many years ago, I just never had time to proofread it thoroughly enough. But the eldest daughter lifts Moses. There are 7 daughters. And when the eldest lifts Moses, she's healed, as are her sisters likewise. They were all diseased. When they held Moses, they were healed. All of them were in turn healed when they held him. So there were miracles, according to this Arabian tradition. And Moses was just a baby. Moses is brought to the Pharaoh's wife, Asiya, who appeals to him to adopt the child, as she is without a male child. Pharaoh consents. But a practical difficulty arises when a wet nurse is sought for, but none is found able to feed it. And, of course, the Bible tells us that it was... Well, it tells us the solution to the problem, which we'll get to later. The life of Moses is endangered in this way by starvation, when they can't initially find a wet nurse, okay? That's the end of our study for today. In the Arabian tradition, but the Arabian tradition doesn't contradict the Bible. It seems it's just gives us more details and information. The Bible doesn't mention the other details that we've been reading about. Many of these details are not in the Bible. We have to meditate on them and see whether we agree with them. I suppose there's no way to know for sure, unless they do contradict the Bible. But Ecclesiastes 12, verse 10 is our proverb for today, little children. The congregators sought to find the delightful words and the writing of correct words of truth. So it's not just that he wanted to congregate the people and bring them together, but he wanted the words to be delightful and correct. And not just correct, but delightful. So that's important, I think, also. So we're going to, well, what do you think, little children? But isn't that something? It seems very, I'm inspired by that. But there's also a scripture at Jeremiah 7:16, which you might want to check out. It says, do not pray for this people. So it's not always about unity, in other words. We're not always seeking unity. 2 Kings 22 is our reading for today. This is about the King Josiah. And he ruled for 31 years in Jerusalem, it says in verse 1, which when we look at the Moses part 2 table in that article, part 2 of Moses table, H4, Hezekiah was succeeded by, and we know this from before, by Manasseh, who ruled 55 years, and then Amon ruled 2 years. We read that yesterday. And now Josiah rules for 31 years, from 639 to 608 BCE in the genealogy. Now, we know that it's possible that a chronology can be just like an idol. We can worship the chronology. We don't want to do that. That's why we continually adjust our chronology according to the facts that we know. And we're continually seeking to improve on the chronology if we can. But it's the best chronology that we can find. is what we're interested in. We don't worship the chronology. 8 years old was Josiah when he began to reign, and for 31 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jedidah, the daughter of Adiah, from Bozkath. And he proceeded to do what was right in Jehovah's eyes and to walk in all the way of David, his forefather, and he did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And by the way, brothers, there's a new video on the JW.org site. There are, I believe, several, but there's the JW Broadcasting for February has now been released, and I haven't had an opportunity to watch much of it yet, or many of these videos I haven't seen yet. And he proceeded to do what was right in Jehovah's eyes. It says in verse 2, 2 Kings 22, did Josiah. And it came about in the 18th year of King Josiah. This is important, because 639, the 18th year, is 622, right? Or 621, which is, that's right around the time of the Jubilee, okay? In our chronology. 622 and then 672 and 622 and 572 and every 22 and every 72 in every century is the Jubilee year. And in that 18th year, King Josiah sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah, the son of Meshullam, the secretary, to the house of Jehovah, saying, go up to Hilkiah the high priest, and let him complete the money that is being brought into the house of Jehovah that the doorkeepers have gathered from the people, and let them put it into the hand of those doing the work, the appointed ones in the house of Jehovah, that they may give it to those doing the work who are in the house of Jehovah to repair the cracks of the house, to the craftsmen and the builders and the masons, and to buy timbers and hewn stones to repair the house. Only no accounting should be taken of the money with them into whose hand it is being put, for it is in faithfulness that they are working. Later Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the secretary, the very book of the law I have found in the house of Jehovah. So Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, and he began to read it. Then Shaphan the secretary came into the king and replied to the king and said, your servants have poured out the money that was to be found in the house, and they keep putting it into the hand of the doers of the work, the ones appointed in the house of Jehovah. And Shaphan the secretary went on to tell the king, saying, it sounds like he almost said it casually, there is a book that Hilkiah the priest has given me. It wasn't the first thing he mentioned. And Shaphan began to read it before the king. And he didn't even mention that it was the book of the law of Moses. And it came about that as soon as the king heard the words of the book of the law, he immediately ripped his garments apart. Then the king commanded Hilkiah the priest and Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Achbor, the son of Micaiah, and Shaphan the secretary and Asaiah the king's servant, saying, go inquire of Jehovah in my own behalf, and in behalf of the people, and in behalf of all Judah, concerning the words of this book that has been found. For great is Jehovah's rage that has been set afire against us over the fact that our forefathers did not listen to the words of this book by doing according to all that is written concerning us. You know, he says, go inquire of Jehovah. The king said, Josiah said, that is. And how old was he when he began to reign? 8 years old. So it was in his 18th year, when he was 25 or 26 years old, that these things happened. He's a young man, relatively, just about in his prime. And it came about as soon as the king heard. He ripped his garments apart, but that was verse 11. And he said, go inquire of Jehovah. That was verse 13. Accordingly, Hilkiah the priest and Ahikam and Achbor and Shaphan and Asaiah went, and look where they went. They went to Huldah, the prophetess, the wife of Shallum, the son of Tikva, the son of Harhas, the caretaker of the garments, as she was dwelling in Jerusalem in the second quarter, and they proceeded to speak to her. Maybe she didn't dwell there all year long, but she was a prophetess. They went to a woman prophetess, or prophet. In turn, she said to them, this is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said. Say to the man that has sent you men to me, this is what Jehovah has said. Here I am bringing calamity upon this place and upon its inhabitants, even all the words of the book that the king of Judah has read. Due to the fact that they have left me and have gone making sacrificial smoke to other gods in order to offend me with all the work of their hands, and my rage has been set afire against this place and will not be extinguished. That was the end of what she said. Or that was the end of what Jehovah said in that particular quote there. And then it goes on, verse 18, "And as to the king of Judah who is sending you to inquire of Jehovah," she said, "this is what you should say to him. This is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said." Right, first she said, "Say to the man that has sent you men to me, this is what Jehovah has said, I am bringing calamity upon this place," verse 16, and so on, and 17, and then verse 18, "And as to the king of Judah who is sending you to inquire of Jehovah, this is what you should say to him." So there's another thing added here. This is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said, "As regards the words that you have heard, for the reason that your heart was soft, so that you humbled yourself." So the king, this is a personal message to the king himself. That's why it was separate. "For the reason that your heart was soft," the king, Josiah, his heart was soft, "so that you humbled yourself because of Jehovah, at your hearing what I have spoken against this place and its inhabitants, for it to become an object of astonishment and a malediction. And then you ripped your garments apart and began weeping before me. I have heard, is the utterance of Jehovah. That is why here I am gathering you to your forefathers, and you will certainly be gathered to your own graveyard in peace, and your eyes will not look upon all the calamity that I am bringing upon this place." And they proceeded to bring the king the reply. That's a rhyming phrase that's hard to say. They proceeded to bring the king the reply. But look at that statement. It appears like we know he didn't exactly die in peace. He died in warfare against Pharaoh Necho, as the Bible also tells us. But he was gathered to his own graveyard in peace is a rather strange statement, knowing what we know about how Josiah did die as the king. He died in battle against Pharaoh Necho. But it said he would be gathered to his own graveyard. At least he was gathered to his own graveyard. He didn't die and not get buried or something, or he wasn't buried somewhere else. So part of this prophecy certainly came true, but in peace, it wasn't really gathered in peace. But it was true that his eyes did not look upon all the calamity that came afterward. That's true. So it was still peace in that sense, that the calamity had not yet arrived, like which came about immediately following, because Egypt, they dethroned Jehoahaz, who ruled for 3 months after Josiah, as the Bible tells us. And they placed Jehoiakim upon the throne, and so the kingship of Israel no longer belonged to Jehovah after that. So this was a calamity that came after the days of Josiah. So that prophecy did come true. We see when we study it further. In essence, it came true. Now, Ezekiel 46, "This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. As regards the gate of the inner courtyard that is facing east, it should continue shut for the 6 work days." So we're going to learn more here in Ezekiel about this gate that it said in the previous chapter was not going to be opened. It should continue shut for the 6 work days, but on the Sabbath day, and on the Sabbath day it should be opened, and on the day of the new moon it should be opened. So there were times when this gate would be opened, and Jehovah adds to his statements when he feels and when he deems it appropriate. He doesn't have to just restrict himself to one statement or anything like that. 7 and 16. Where is it? Of Jeremiah. I'm looking for Jeremiah. I wanted to show you Jeremiah 7 and 16 just for those who don't have a Bible handy. 7 and 16 of Jeremiah. "And as for you, do not pray in behalf of this people, neither raise in their behalf an entreating cry or a prayer, nor beseech me, for I shall not be listening to you. That shows that even though some people are supposed to be God's people, doesn't mean we need to pray for them or that we even should pray for them, because they may not be worthy of being recipients of benefits from our prayers. That's what that says. We should be wary of praying in behalf of Jehovah's people if they're not in fact doing his will. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah in Ezekiel 46 has said. As regards the gate of the inner courtyard that is facing east, it should continue shut for the 6 work days, and on the Sabbath day it should be opened, and on the day of the new moon it should be opened. And the chieftain must come in by the way of the porch of the gate from outside. He could come in through the porch without opening the gate, in other words, and stand by the doorpost of the gate. And the priests must render up his whole burnt offering and his communion sacrifices. The chieftain, whoever that was going to be in those days, it might not be a king. This is a prophetic statement looking ahead. Ezekiel looking ahead to the later time when the and it turned out there wasn't a king, right? At that time when the temple was restored by Ezra, and when it was rebuilt and finished in the 6th year of Darius, that temple there was no king in Israel because they were under a governor. And that's interesting. So the chieftain, it's prophetic here. If it had said the king, it would have been wrong prophetically, because there was no king when Israel returned from Babylon. They had a governor instead. They were governed by the people who sent them back, the Medes and Persians, who had liberated them. And the chieftain must come in by the way of the porch of the gate. Okay. And he must bow down upon the threshold of the gate, and he must go out, but the gate itself should not be shut until the evening. And the people of the land must bow down at the entrance of that gate on the Sabbaths and on the new moons before Jehovah. People of the land. And the whole burnt offering. Let's check that. Can we click on that footnote? Where is it? I'm not seeing it. Oh, it says C-727 footnote. People of the land is Amha-Aretz. Amha-Aretz is the Hebrew word or expression. It's later used in a contemptuous sense, the people of the land, according to Ezekiel 7:27. That's the footnote for Ezekiel 46 and 3. And verse 4 now. And the whole burnt offering and that the chieftain should present to Jehovah on the Sabbath day should be 6 sound male lambs and a sound ram. So this is not what we literally do today, obviously. We just don't. It's such an enormously bloody thing to slaughter all these animals. But that's what they used to do under the Mosaic Law, and this prophecy applied to the future at that time of Ezekiel, to the restored condition that we can think of it as being spiritually applicable today. So this is what they were to present on the Sabbath day: 6 sound male lambs, the chieftain should present, and a sound ram. And as a grain offering, an ephah for the ram, and for the male lambs, a grain offering as he is able to give. So, as he's able to give, an ephah for the ram, but for the male lambs, a grain offering as he's able to give. And as regards oil, a hin to the ephah. And on the day of the new moon, there should be a young bull, the son of the herd, a sound one, and 6 males, of the flock. In other words, six, it says six male lambs. I don't know why I didn't read that correctly. And a ram. So the same as before, but a bull, first of all, and then six male lambs and a ram. Sound ones, they should prove to be. And an ephah for the young bull and an ephah for the ram he should render up as a grain offering. And for the male lambs, according to what he is able to afford. And as regards oil, a hin to the ephah. And when the chieftain comes in by the way of the porch of the gate, he should come in, and by the way of it, he should go out. And when the people of the land come in before Jehovah in the festal seasons, the one coming in by the way of the north gate in order to bow down should go out by the way of the south gate. And the one coming in by the way of the south gate should go out by the way of the gate to the north. No one should go back by the way of the gate by which he came in, for he should go out straight ahead of him. And as regards the chieftain in their midst, when they come in, he should come in. When they go out, he should go out. And in the festivals and in the festal seasons, a grain offering should prove to be an ephah for the young bull and an ephah for the ram. And for the male lambs, as he is able to give. And as regards oil, a hin to the ephah. And in case the chieftain should provide as a voluntary offering a whole burnt offering or communion sacrifices as a voluntary offering to Jehovah, one must also open to him the gate that is facing east, and he must provide his whole burnt offering and his communion sacrifices just as he does on the Sabbath day. And he must go out, and one must shut the gate after his going out. And a sound male lamb in its first year you should provide as a whole burnt offering daily to Jehovah. Morning by morning you should provide it. And as a grain offering you should provide with it morning by morning the sixth of an ephah. And as regards oil, so you see six male lambs. Interestingly, the lambs were before. Six male lambs. But the grain offering was whatever he could afford, right? That's right. Whereas now, there's one male lamb per day, but it's not whatever he can afford. It's obligatory that it be a sixth of an ephah, so it would have been an ephah for all six of these male lambs if it had been obligatory, but it wasn't obligatory for the six. But now for this one daily offering, it was a sixth of an ephah for the grain offering, along with the male lamb. And as regards oil, verse 14, the third of a hin for sprinkling the fine flour. Fascinating, isn't it? The grain offering to Jehovah is an indefinitely lasting statute, constantly. Every day they provided these offerings of the male lamb with its grain and oil. And they must provide the male lamb and the grain offering and the oil morning by morning as a constant whole burnt offering. That was verse 15, which is what I just said. I just paraphrased it without realizing it was the next verse. Verse 16, this is what the... Of course, I've read this earlier, so I must have known it was coming. Verse 16, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. In case the chieftain should give a gift to each one of his sons as an inheritance... as his inheritance, that is, the inheritance of his son, it itself will become the property of his sons themselves. It is their possession by inheritance. And in case he should give a gift from his inheritance to one of his servants, it must also become his until the year of liberty. In other words, the Jubilee. We just talked about the year of Jubilee when we were reading 2 Kings, because there it was mentioning... you know, that was 2 Kings 22, right? Yeah, Josiah. But 2 Kings 22 mentioned that Josiah, it was his 18th year, which in our chronology happens to be a Jubilee, which is the year of liberty. So it corresponds again without any planning on our part. And it must return to the chieftain in the year of liberty, in other words. You know, that's what happened in the Jubilee. Property returned to the original owner in the Jubilee. Only his inheritance, as regards his sons, is what should continue to belong to their own selves. That did not return in the Jubilee, which is also called the Year of Liberty. Interesting. There in verse 17. And It's also called the release, the year of the release, which is also another way of saying the Jubilee, or the manumission, the year of the manumission. That's an interesting word, isn't it? Is in the footnote there. Right here, the year of the release, or the manumission. That's the footnote for this, verse 17. So, and the chieftain, verse 18, should not take any of the inheritance of the people. He should not take any of the inheritance of the people so as to force them out of their possession. From his own possession, he should give his sons an inheritance. He shouldn't give to his sons an inheritance, is what it's saying. It's not saying he should give his sons away, or he shouldn't offer them in sacrifice either, which was wrong, obviously, dreadfully wrong. From his own possession, he should give his sons an inheritance. We've been reading about Manasseh in 2 Kings, who gave his sons, or other kings too, not Josiah, but Manasseh gave at least one of his sons in sacrifice, which is horrific. He gave him by taking the life of his son, gave him to the false gods. For his own possession, he should give his sons an inheritance. From his own possession, he should give his sons an inheritance, to the end that my people may not be scattered, each one from his possession. So that's why also the land returned to the original owner in the Jubilee. He wasn't to give land from the land of the people. Not permanently. Certainly couldn't do that. And in fact, he didn't have any rights regarding other people's land. In verse 18, he should not take any of the inheritance of the people. That's right. In other words, freedom prevailed. And he proceeded, that's important, isn't it? The concept of freedom is important. So this idea of being united in thought should never prevail over the concept of freedom. This is easily seen here. In verse 19, and he proceeded to bring me in by the entryway that was by the side of the gate to the holy dining rooms, those belonging to the priests that were facing to the north. And look, there was a place there on both rear sides to the west. On both rear sides, in the rear of them, it says in the Masoretic text. Both rear sides is the margin of the Masoretic text. Right. Both rear sides. And the Masoretic text, in the rear of them. It's 46 and 19. And he proceeded, verse 20, to say to me, this is the place where the priests will boil the guilt offering and the sin offering, and where they will bake the grain offering, in order to carry nothing out to the outer courtyard, so as to sanctify the people. They had to bake it in a more or less concealed area, right? Not the outer courtyard. And he proceeded in verse 21 to bring me out to the outer courtyard and make me pass along to the four corner posts of the courtyard. And look, there was a courtyard by this corner post of the courtyard, and a courtyard by that corner post of the courtyard. At the four corner posts of the courtyard, there were small courtyards, 40 cubits in length and 30 in width, 40 by 30 cubits. The four of them with corner structures had the same measurement. Corner structures is omitted. This with corner structure statement is omitted by the Septuagint, Syriac, Peshitta version, and the Latin Vulgate, according to the footnote in the Masoretic text. This word is marked with extraordinary points by the Sopharim, they were the scribes, to stigmatize it as spurious, in other words, false, and hence to be omitted. Even though it was copied by them. The four of them with corner structures had the same measurement, or the four of them had the same measurement. And verse 23, and there was a row round about them, round about the four of them, and there were boiling places made beneath the rows round about. Then he said to me, these are the houses of those doing the boiling, where the ministers of the house boil the sacrifice of the people. So when it says there was a row round about them, it's interesting. Maybe it means a row of houses, because it says these are the houses in verse 24, is what he said to Ezekiel. The houses of those doing the boiling were the ministers of the house, boil the sacrifice of the people. So that's the end of Ezekiel 46 for today. That's just about, we've got 2 minutes left of our study. But, I mean, we're going to hopefully see more about what happened in the 18th year of Josiah, because that was the year, the 18th year of Josiah was an important year, and that's a year that is, in Jewish tradition, connected to the Jubilees so as to be, what was it, the 16th or 17th Jubilee? I'm trying to remember. It's one of those, I think. Let me think. I think the 17th Jubilee is 850 years. That's the destruction of the temple. That doesn't come until 572, which is after the... So it's during the end of that Jubilee doesn't come. But their arrival in Israel came before the first Jubilee. They crossed the Jordan, and then they conquered the land, and then that was before that occurred in our chronology in 1436 BCE, you know, or 1437, I should say, 1437 BCE, sometime around there, which is 15 years after they crossed the Jordan. They conquered the land, and they started, you know, they were basically, they had divided it up at that point. They still continued conquering the people of that land, but they didn't really get settled much until 1437. That's why it was 850 years after that. What date is it? 50 and 87 and 50 is 37. So that's right, 137. So it was 850 years when the temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar in 587 BCE. 850 years, which is 17 times 50 or 17 jubilees. If you do that math. So that was the end of the 17th Jubilee, which means that 50 years prior to 572, which would have been the end of the 17th Jubilee, because the Jubilees didn't start until 1422, not 1437, but 15 years later. But since the 17th Jubilee ended in 572, rather, then you add 50 years to that, and 622 was the end of the 16th Jubilee. So that's what is talked about in the Jewish tradition. This 18th year of Josiah is referred to in some tradition of the Jews as the 16th Jubilee. That's the end of our study for today, little ones. Now the fridge shuts off. It's February 7th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 20:47 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again. It's been great to be with you. On my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.